This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. We're very pleased to welcome David Maxwell, a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, just returned from the Korean Peninsula to help us understand what appears to be a new direction for the government of South Korea and the defense of South Korea in coordination with the United States. I read from Reuters these days past. South Korea, U.S. begin largest military drills in years amid North Korea backlash. Dateline Seoul, South Korea and the United States began their largest joint military drills in years with a resumption of field training as the allies seek to tighten readiness over North Korea's potential weapons tests. David, welcome back. It's called Ultra Freedom Shield. What's the significance now? What's changed? Good evening to you.
Good evening. This is the annual scheduled exercise that has been taking place really since the 1970s. So it always takes place in the last 2 weeks of August, and it is a major exercise to ensure the readiness of the ROK-US Combined Forces Command and all of the subordinate components. So it is a very complex undertaking consisting of command post training, for all the senior leaders, senior staffs, and then, of course, field training, air, land, and sea of ROK and U.S. Forces. And, of course, as noted, President Trump unilaterally canceled this exercise in 2018, saying that it's too expensive, it's a waste, and, of course, ostensibly to appease Kim Jong-un so that he would negotiate. And make him feel secure because Kim Jong-un calls this a demonstration of our hostile policy. Even though this is a defensive exercise that is focused solely on defending against a North Korean attack. And of course, it is Kim Jong-un that has the real hostile policy.
And the size of it, is that some difference that it is profound or just more people available?
Well, it's because in the past 4 years, we've scaled it back again to support diplomacy, to support the hope that that Kim Jong-un will negotiate. Plus, we've been affected by COVID. And so the training has been scaled back. But it's also important to note this is one of the two major exercises. However, there is field training and multiple training events that take place year round. But this is the second or the of the large exercises, the other one being in March, Key Resolve and Full Eagle. And so everybody focuses on these exercises. And of course, Kim Jong-un focuses on them because he exploits these exercises as a way to highlight the hostile policy and to try to drive a wedge in the ROK-US alliance. Those who want to appease Kim Jong-un and those who want to ensure the defense of South Korea. And so he's hoping to create that friction by saying that these exercises are a threat to him and that they are an illustration of the hostile policy.
Gordon, you have a question for David.
Dave, when in 2017 the United States scaled back our two major exercises on the peninsula, did North Korea scale back its winter training cycle or its other exercises?
Absolutely not. And there's never been any reciprocity in that. And I think, but most importantly, the lesson that we must learn from this is that, you know, since 2018 till now, that none of the cancellation, postponement, or scaling back has any positive effect on North Korean decision making. It has no impact whatsoever. And so we should never again sacrifice readiness, sacrifice the ability to properly defend South Korea in the fool's errand and false hope that somehow Kim Jong-un will become a responsible member of the international community and negotiate in good faith. That is just not in the cards, and we should never again make this error.
David, Gordon tells me that a South Korean general, an ROK general, is in charge. Is that distinction?
That's very important. And although in the past, the deputy commander has been in charge for certain scenarios within the training. He is commanding the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command for the entire exercise. General Ahn and General Camara is the exercise director. So he's evaluating him. And this is in support of the OPCON transition. And they are conducting what's called the full operational capability certification in preparation for when a Korean general will assume permanent command of the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command after the OPCON transition conditions have been met.
Gordon?
Dave, you talk about OPCON transfer. This has been on the discussion for a very long time. When do you think it will actually occur?
Well, that's a tough question. The good thing is that the Yoon administration is in no hurry, unlike the Moon administration, who wanted it at all costs without meeting the conditions. So the Yoon administration, I think they are proceeding very deliberately. The conditions have to be met. And, you know, they are working on those conditions, but they have not been met and they will not be met because the most important condition to be met is a reduction of the threat from the north. Primarily, the nuclear threat has to be reduced. And so that condition is unlikely to be met in any time in the near future. The other conditions are increased South Korean independent warfighting capabilities, command and control, intelligence, as well as missile defense capabilities. Those are all improving. The Iraq military is investing in all of those in the Iraq government. But the key condition of a reduction of the threat from the north is unlikely to be met in any time in the future. Now, the allies, Iraq and U.S., can decide not to wait for that condition. But as it stands now, that condition will not be met in any way in the near future.
David, there's a new president in Seoul, President Yoon Suk-yeol. Does his presence make a difference to the exercises now and in future?
Well, yes, there's his leadership. He is supportive of the alliance, supportive of the defense. He and the Biden administration are in lockstep with ensuring readiness of the force. I also think that he is under no illusion about the threat from the north. He has stated that North Korea is the main enemy. He has also stated that there will be no more appeasement of Kim Jong-un. And those two statements really bode well for the strength of the alliance and the future of the alliance. And so I think that makes a huge difference. And so this exercise is proceeding at full scale and with all intensity necessary to ensure readiness to be able to properly defend South Korea from a North Korean attack.
Can I interpret that as a boost of morale in the ROC, David? Do you see it? Do you hear about it?
Yes, I think there's a positive improvement. What I hear from mostly I deal with former military leaders, like myself, but they're speaking very positively about the direction, the support to the military. And so I think this is certainly a morale boost for not only the ROC forces, but the combined military forces, ROC and U.S. military.
Gordon, another question.
Dave, in conjunction with Ultra Freedom Shield, the military exercises, I just learned that there is something called the Ultra Civil Defense exercises as well. What can you tell us about them?
Yes, this has always been part of it. And what the Ultra portion is the ROC government's civil defense. And it is about the road to war. It is the sharing of intelligence, the indications and warnings that North Korea is going to attack. And what the South Korean government goes through is making the decisions to mobilize the reserves of the military, to go to a war footing, and then at the proper time to transfer the operational control of ROC forces, of designated ROC forces, to the Combined Forces Command, not to the U.S., but to the ROC-U.S. Combined Forces Command. And at the same time, the U.S. Will be going through the same decision process, making the decision to transfer operational control of U.S. forces to the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command, not to the ROC government after OPCON transition. Both governments make the decision to transfer their forces to the operational control of the ROC U.S. Combined Forces Command, which answers equally to both governments and both presidents.
David, we have less than a minute. I ask because it has history. Does this mean more air defense for South Korea, more THAAD system, Patriot system, more coming?
That's difficult. I think that THAAD and Patriot are high demand, low density resources. They're in demand around the world to support U.S. assets, U.S. interests. So I'm not sure if there's going to be any more. What is more important, though, is the recently conducted integrated missile defense exercise, South Korea, the U.S. and Japan. And it's imperative that, of course, South Korea and Japan invest in their missile defense capabilities, not depending on U.S. systems. I don't think there's going to be any THAAD deployment soon, because I just don't think we have the resources.
Okay.
Perhaps more Patriots, but South Korea and Japan are investing in their missile defense systems, and that's what's critical.
David Maxwell, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bachelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.